Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
105.9 FM. Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. And we've got an action-packed program coming up for you. A lot of talk in the news about the latest Omicron variant of the COVID virus. We'll talk with Dr. Bob Lahida coming up very shortly, and we'll try and cut through some of the clutter. There's a lot of messaging going on out there, and it's very confusing, and Dr. Bob Lahida is a real straight shooter, so we're going to get with him coming up very shortly this morning, within this half hour. Jennifer Harper will join us from the Washington Times, always has a look at poll numbers, what's going on, and some amazing ratings for the Fox News Channel, as, of course, CNN will be suffering from the temporary, at least, suspension of Chris Cuomo. We'll be talking with Jim Trusty, of course, our legal expert, and we're going to talk with Jim about the Jussie Smollett trial, which has been going on in Chicago, the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, of course, the associate of Jeffrey Epstein, and you may have heard about an alternate Mueller report that may be coming out. Kind of a strange story, and Jim will give us some real insight into it. It's coming out of the Department of Justice, and as you know, Jim Trusty is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. DOJ, so he knows how it works over there. We'll get a real good read from him on that. John Gizzi is coming up. He's going to kick off the 7 o'clock hour for us, our White House correspondent at Newsmax.com, and he was at the briefing on Thursday where President Biden was a bit under the weather, and we'll get the latest from John on what's going on at the White House. Another Democrat is not running for re-election in 2022. We'll tell you who that is coming up with John. Cheryl Atkinson will join us later on this morning, and we're going to look into some of the COVID confusion with Cheryl, so stick around for that. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer's on the way, the ramping up of things at the border, Ukraine, Russia. What's the latest there? A lot of talk of a possible incursion by the Russians after the first of the year. And then KT McFarland will put it all in perspective for us as we look at kind of the U.S. foreign policy situation as well as our domestic issues in the Biden administration. So we have a lot to cover for you on the Saturday Morning Update. Breaking news overnight, as you retired last evening, you may have heard that there had been a manhunt on for the parents of Ethan Crumbly. He is the 15-year-old who is accused of killing four fellow students at a Michigan high school. Well, the prosecutor announced involuntary manslaughter charges against the parents, and they went on the run. There was a manhunt underway in Michigan overnight. A vehicle matching the description of their Kia was found. Someone informed the police that they were hiding out in Detroit, about 40 miles from Oxford, where the shooting had taken place. A police perimeter was set up. Law enforcement did apprehend the parents of Ethan Crumbly. James White is the chief of the Detroit Police, and here's how he explained what happened in the wee hours of this morning.
We got a tip that they were here, or that possibly the fugitives were at this location. The vehicle was spotted. Our officers responded in a matter of minutes. When they got here, they set up a perimeter, did surveillance. We notified and activated our Metro Division, our special response team. They came out. And they were able to take the fugitives into custody.
Well, they certainly appeared to be distressed, as you can imagine. You know, as I indicated, you know, they were in a commercial building, in a room. We were able to take them into custody without incident. However, they were very distressed as they were walking out.
Is any indication of that they were aided in getting into the building?
Yes. Yes, in fact, they were aided. And we're looking into that portion of the investigation. That part is very active right now.
So that's the very latest on that case, the parents apprehended overnight. Turning to Washington, jobs numbers came out yesterday. There was an expectation that 550,000 jobs would be added in November. A very disappointing 210,000 jobs actually added. And here's how President Biden explained it in a White House press briefing yesterday.
Our economy is markedly stronger than it was a year ago. And today, the incredible news that our unemployment rate has fallen to 4.2%.
The unemployment rate down to 4.2%. I think that's going to go up again as more people seem to be leaving Kamala Harris's staff, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes here on the program. But the president went on, and you may have noticed his voice was very raspy and very deep. He's got a cold. Now, you know, the president has a tendency to blame everybody else for everything. I mean, everything going on in the country right now that's not good is all Trump's fault, according to President Biden. Well, they asked him about his cold that he has.
Your voice sounds a little different. Are you okay?
I'm okay. I have a test every day to see a COVID test. I have it checking for all the strains. What I have is a 1.5-year-old grandson who had a cold who likes to kiss his pop. And he'd been kissing in my anyway, so but it's just a cold.
Blames the grandchild, okay? Wow. Couldn't he have just said, I got a cold? But no, he has to put the blame on somebody and puts it on his grandchild. I don't know. I wonder how the kid's mother felt about that. Anyway, Build Back Better is not built back yet. And still a lot of back and forth on Capitol Hill. And will Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema get behind it? Well, Mitch McConnell is not a big fan of the Build Back Better bill going any further.
I'm hoping, obviously, that Kyrsten and Joe in the end will decide that passing anything close to this. Look, this bill is full of incredibly bad stuff.
Incredibly bad stuff. Well, have you noticed Joe Manchin is always on the move when the reporters are trying to reach him? So he's always walking, which is a very smart move. And Joe Manchin was asked about the legislation, and here's what he had to say.
I wouldn't have any idea how I'm going to vote until I walk in.
Wow. All right. It's like I'll tell you later. And Kyrsten Sinema, that's the other key Democrat that they're having problems convincing. She was interviewed on CNN, and here's some of what she's feeling these days about Build Back Better as interviewed on CNN.
I won't support any legislation that increases burdens on Arizona or American businesses and reduces our ability to compete either domestically or globally. Sure that if we are crafting legislation, we're doing it in a lean and efficient way that's fiscally responsible and doesn't impact things like inflation.
And this will continue. We're at 6:16. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We're going to try and cut through the clutter on COVID and the Omicron variant. We'll talk with Dr. Bob Lahida next, but first we're going to head over to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there this morning.
On the northbound BW Parkway, just before the Beltway, getting reports of some crash activity, and looks like traffic is slowing through the area. There is emergency utility work to watch out for in Kensington on East Bend University Boulevard between Madison Street and St. Paul Street. Left lane gets by. Watch out for the right lane to be closed there. And also getting reports of an accident now in Lanham, East Bend on 50 at the Beltway. Beltway itself looks like is running at speed so far through Maryland and Virginia. Earlier roadwork on the outer loop between 66 and Arlington Boulevard now cleared away. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny skies on this Saturday. Temperatures, they will be on the mild side, seasonably so in the upper 50s to near 60 degrees. As we head later on tonight, low temperatures back in the upper 20s in some of the outlying suburbs, low to mid-30s around town under partly cloudy skies. A little weak cold front will shift through during the day on Saturday. Really will be a dry frontal passage, but it brings with it some cooler air as we get towards your Sunday. High temperatures in the upper 40s to near 50 degrees under partly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
43 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:18, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Dr. Bob Lahida. We've had him on often. You've seen him a lot on television this week, a number of different outlets. And he is the director of St. Joseph's Institute for Autoimmune and Rheumatic Diseases. And he has a new book coming out, which will be out in January, Immunity Strong, Boost Your Natural Healing Power and Live to 100. Dr. Lahida, thanks for coming back with us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
There's a lot of messaging out right now on the Omicron variant. We're hearing things from the CDC, from the White House. You hear things from both sides of the aisle in Congress. many of the medical professionals are not exactly in agreement on all of this, and I understand that this is a newly discovered variant, probably not a lot of research, not a big baseline in terms of studies and things like that, but what can we find out from you? They talk about the transmissibility differences and that this variant is much more transmissible. How does that translate to how our daily behavior should be?
Well, the fact that it's more transmissible, Rick, doesn't mean that it's more lethal. And I think people need to know that. You know, the Delta variant is fairly transmissible, and I cannot imagine this being more transmissible than the Delta variant, which, you know, is like, and I use this analogy, I don't know if I've ever used it with you, like glitter. You know, when you have your little child with a dress on that's got glitter bunnies on it, and all of a sudden you notice there's glitter everywhere in your house, mm-hmm. on your dinner plates and your kitchen and your bedroom. That's what this virus is like. It just goes everywhere. You don't have to be coughed on or sneezed on directly to really get it. Now, everybody's immune system is different. Everybody is, depending on who you are, your susceptibility is probably different based on your health, what comorbidities you have, whether you have a good diet, whether you're an alcoholic or have diabetes, et cetera, or you're obese. That's a big factor. So everybody's different. So the fact that it's more transmissible doesn't particularly concern me. What does concern me is that those people who don't get vaccinated are at significant risk because their immune systems are virginal. They're untouched by this coronavirus and its antigens. So when you get vaccinated, your immune system is taught that this coronavirus is foreign and it's dangerous, and both your innate and adaptive immune systems go into effect and really help protect your body from bad, bad infection. Now, what we don't know about the Omicron variant, which has 26 new mutations in a very, very important area of the virus called the spike protein. That spike protein is what the vaccine is made against. It's also, if you've had an infection, it's also what your immune system is directed against, and it's also what monoclonal antibodies are directed against that we use to treat you in an acute situation when you come to the emergency room. So it's really important for us to understand, and we don't have enough data yet to understand how these 26 mutations that are upregulated in this coronavirus, how they are going to deal with the humans that they come into contact with. And that means the largely unvaccinated people are at significant risk. And you should get a booster.
And in speaking of boosters, I know it's early in the game, but is there any sense yet of which of the different vaccines might provide better protection against this variant?
No, there's no data on that yet. The boosters, the messenger RNA boosters of Pfizer and Moderna are very, very effective. And the J&J vaccine, which is a viral vector vaccine, is also quite effective. They all do the same thing. Now, it's much easier, Rick, to produce a new vaccine against the Omicron variant using the templates that already exist to create the messenger RNA vaccine for the Delta variant, for example. And I'm told by the chief scientist at BioNTech that they're in the process now of making a tailor-made vaccine against the Omicron variant should it be needed. We're not sure it yet. But you couldn't do that 10, 15 years ago. Because of molecular medicine and our ability to have these templates and manufacture in the laboratory messenger RNA variants of our own, not the virus, but to protect us against the virus, we can tailor make the vaccines very rapidly. Within 100 days is what they're saying. So that's very exciting news. So this is not doom and gloom right now, and we shouldn't go nuts and get panicky. But it is very important to use your head, if you're a listener to this program, and go out there and get a vaccine. It's harmless. It will not hurt you. Despite all the crazy stories that are around and misinformation and disinformation purposefully put out there to make people vaccine hesitant, that's a mistake and it should be avoided. So I think people should go out there, get your CVS to give you the vaccine, whichever one you like, And I wish it was as easy in places like Lesotho, South Africa, to do the same thing. Those people are really struggling to get vaccinated, and they have problems with access and problems with numbers and humidity and heat and all the other things that one would worry about in a country like that, which is not getting a lot of vaccine material.
So we're hearing a lot about the boosters, and initially they say that you can just kind of mix and match. So if you had a J&J to begin with, you could get a Moderna booster. Is there any further information on that, or is it just sort of mix and match if you want?
Mix and match if you want, because remember, the end result is the stimulation of your immune system against COVID-19. That's it. So if that you understand is the end result, then any one of these boosters is sufficient. If you got Pfizer and you decide to get the J&J as a booster, or you got J&J and you want to get Moderna as your booster, that's all fine because it all does the same thing. The end result is all the same, protection.
What would you say the latest is on the treatments of COVID in terms of the ones that seem to be showing the most promise?
Well, the treatments right now, well, let's talk about, first of all, those that are approved. Right now, we're still using remdesivir, and we're using dexamethasone when you come into the hospital and you're very, very sick. When you're in the emergency room, we now have monoclonal antibodies that we can give you. Those are for the people who come in critically ill. The monoclonal antibody prevents them from winding up in the intensive care unit, and that's good news. That monoclonal antibody is what President Trump took when he was sick, and his and other members of Congress and people who were very infected at the time. Regeneron is the manufacturer of this. We're worried that the Omicron variant may be elusive as far as monoclonal antibodies go. So that's the treatment. Then we have these two new oral agents coming along. Molnupiravir, which is a drug that can be taken by mouth. It's a pill, and it really is made by Merck and gives you a 50% response of not going to the hospital once you get the symptoms. You have to get infected. Once you get the symptoms of COVID, you can take this molnupiravir. It's not approved yet. The FDA is considering it. I guess it might be emergency use authorization, but it'll be ready next year. The second drug is Paxlovid, which is 90% effective, and that's a different kind of a drug and made by Pfizer. It's an oral pill. And people say, well, what's it like? It's like Tamiflu when you get influenza. You take Tamiflu to mitigate the symptoms and signs of influenza. Here we're talking about COVID-19. So molnupiravir and Paxlovid are two great drugs. Paxlovid is sort of like the drugs we're using to treat hepatitis C and HIV. It's used in conjunction with ritonavir, which is another HIV drug. And molnupiravir is used by itself, and it's a drug that causes the RNA of the virus to sort of explode and not be functional anymore. So the virus can't replicate in your cells. So those are two big revolutionary findings that are coming down the pike. I'm just hoping that people hold out until they come, and I'm hoping that we don't get a variant that is extremely destructive to the population before that time.
Great information. Dr. Bob Lajeda, and congrats on the book, Immunity Strong, coming out January 5th. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure being with you.
6:27, it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. It's 6:30, and we've got some great news on our 2021 WMAL Fisher House Radiothon. As you know, we've been conducting the Radiothon Thursday and Friday of this week, and over the past 2 days, our WMAL listeners have donated $393,622 to Fisher House. It's an increase over last year. And, you know, we've been doing this for 19 years at WMAL, and it's just so wonderful how you, our listeners, come out, support Fisher House every year. And with your support, we've all generated now $8 million for Fisher House. It's pretty amazing. So thank you for your support once again in the WMAL Fisher House Radiothon, another $393,000 this year. That's great. Thank you. It's 6:31. It's time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Greenbelt on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway southbound at Greenbelt Road, an accident there on the shoulder. That is not causing any delays, but seeing some slowing traffic on the northbound side between the Good Luck Road overpass and the Beltway. So heads up there for those delays. On 50 eastbound at the Beltway in Lanham, an accident was being reported, but all lanes are reported to be open and no delays there. In Kensington, watch out for the emergency utility work eastbound on University Boulevard between Madison Street and St. Paul Street. Only the left lane gets by. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny skies on this Saturday. Temperatures, they will be on the mild side, seasonably so in the upper 50s to near 60 degrees. As we head later on tonight, low temperatures back in the upper 20s in some of the outlying suburbs, low to mid 30s around town under partly cloudy skies. A little weak cold front will shift through during the day on Saturday. Really will be a dry frontal passage, but it'll bring with it some cooler air as we get towards your Sunday. High temperatures in the upper 40s to near 50 degrees under partly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
34 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:32, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, 105.9 FM, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper is a fixture with us on Saturday morning. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Always great coverage of what's going on inside the Beltway and checking out the polls. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Rick.
Lot of scuttlebutt this week about who's going to run for president on the Democratic side in 2024. A lot of people are assuming it's not going to be Joe Biden. And what are some of the names they're talking about?
Well, this is a nice humorous way to wake up on a Saturday morning. But this, you won't believe the potential Democratic candidates for president, at least this week. And here we go. We're just going to read this like a bumper sticker, Rick. How about Harris Buttigieg in 2024? That's right. That's Vice President Harris and Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, sharing the Democratic ticket in an election which is going to show up sooner than we think. And this is where this is all surfacing. It started, believe it or not, in Columbia University. And there is a associate professor up there named Lincoln Mitchell, and he has come up with this idea. He's also a political analyst and a consultant. He says the next presidential election is 3 years away. Recent reports about early concern over whether President Joe Biden will run for re-election and about tension between potential 2024 rivals, that would be Pete Buttigieg and Vice President Kamala Harris. He says a Harris-Buttigieg ticket would showcase two dynamic politicians and represent the breadth and depth of the Democratic Party and indeed the whole country, while not veering too far left and alienated key swing voters who Biden won in 2020. Again, this is coming from Lincoln Mitchell. He says this ticket would be balanced with regards to geography. Harris is unmistakably Californian, while Buttigieg is from Indiana and brings with him a deep understanding of the Midwest. He says Harris would be 60 years old on election day in 2024. Buttigieg would be 42. So there would be generational balance there as well. Both nominees represent important Democratic Party constituency. Harris is an African-American and Asian-American woman, while Buttigieg is a gay man. This would help mobilize important parts of the Democratic base. However, both politicians are essentially moderates, so it would be hard for the Republican Party to effectively tar them as radicals, socialists, or anything like that, something they would undoubtedly try to do. So that's just something to mull over. You can imagine that bumper sticker showing up, but that's what they say. And Mr. Mitchell says this is a balanced ticket with two rising Democratic Party stars. So who knows?
Funny how he defines moderate. There's a poll out from Harvard University that you wrote about and I saw that was troubling.
Yeah, it really is. This is the Harvard University Institute of Politics, and they almost annually take it upon themselves to survey young people in a very serious way. And this was kind of an unusual and disquieting survey, a survey that came out this week. This is a survey of 2,109 young Americans age 18 to 29. And they talked about their political view and what their mental state was and how they perceive the United States. And the results are not real encouraging right now. The analysis for this poll said that a majority of young Americans believe that our democracy is in trouble or failing. And 78% still think it's important that the U.S. remain a democracy in the first place. Well, that's certainly reassuring. But here comes the disquieting part. Young Americans place the chances that they will see a second civil war in their lifetime at 35%. Chances that at least one state will secede from the Union at 25%. And almost half of the young Republicans, 46%, place the chances of a second civil war in America at 50% or higher, compared to 32% of Democrats and 38% of independent and unaffiliated voters. And they went all the way down the line here with rural young people. 48% think we're due for a second civil war. 27% of college students, 33% of those who live in an urban setting, 51% of young folks in small towns. And according to a statement from the polling director, John Della Volpe, he says, after turning out in record numbers in 2020, young Americans are sounding the alarm. When they look at the America they will soon inherit, they see a democracy and a climate in peril, and Washington as more interested in confrontation than compromise. So, second civil war lingering on the minds of young people kind of concerns me.
A lot of people wonder who's really in charge of the White House and where Joe Biden gets his advice. I think I can tell you one place he doesn't take his advice from, but Sarah Palin has some for him.
Yes, she does. And, whenever she surfaces in the news, I always pay attention. I remember her so well from the 2008 presidential race. That was a galloping year, wasn't it? But let's talk about the former Alaska governor and 2008 Republican vice presidential hopeful. That's Sarah Palin. And she has some advice for President Biden as the price of gas is climbing up. And in case you're interested, the average price per gallon in the nation at the moment is $3.62 a gallon. This is according to GasBuddy.com. That's an industry source, a very good one. If you're curious about all that, you might want to check it out. But anyway, here is what Ms. Palin wrote in an essay for Breitbart News. She said, "My slogan was drill, baby, drill. It was true and necessary in 2008, and it's needed now more than ever." She says, why does Biden not want to produce here in America with American workers generating tax revenue for the American economy, where high-paying jobs are created for American families, and where we have stricter environmental and worker safety standards than anywhere else in the world? Drill, baby, drill isn't just a desire for more oil. It is a call for more of America. The only part of America where Biden wants more is in our tax dollars. Again, this is coming from Sarah Palin, directed towards the White House. She says, drill, baby, drill is a call for less government and more trust in the American people. It's a call for more America. That spirit was true in 1776, and it is true today. I thought, pretty good advice.
So the football great Herschel Walker started out his career scoring touchdowns on Saturdays. Now he wants to score one on one particular Tuesday, I understand.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk about football great Herschel Walker. He's a Heisman-winning football player at the University of Georgia, we'll have to recall here. And he has declared his intent to run for the U.S. Senate seat in Georgia. And he has now organized a political action committee, which is up and running, to support this conservative Republican. And the name of his political action committee is 34N22. 34, of course, was his number, and 22 is when he wants to run. He says that the group will highlight the strong record and unparalleled work ethic of Herschel Walker as a successful businessman, community leader, Heisman-winning football player. And 34N22 will also work aggressively to hold far-left incumbent Raphael Warnock accountable for his failed policies and divisive rhetoric that have hurt Georgia families. This is according to Mr. Walker's mission statement. He released that this week. And just to revisit, Representative Raphael Warnock, he's a senior pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. He assumed office on January 20th after defeating the Republican incumbent Kelly Loeffler. And Mr. Walker has a very clear mission and a very clear intent. He says the politicians pit Americans against Americans, the rich against the poor, urban versus rural. I don't believe in that garbage. It's a lie. I'm a conservative not because someone told me to be one. I'm a conservative because I believe in smaller government, a strong military, personal responsibility, and making sure all people have the opportunity to pursue their dreams. That's an America worth fighting for. And he says this in a brand new TV campaign spot. He has the endorsement of Mitch McConnell and also former President Donald Trump. Mr. McConnell said that Herschel is the only one who can unite the party, defeat Senator Warnock, and help us take back the Senate. So that's kind of something to watch if you're curious about Mr. Walker. It is 34n22.com. You can see what he has to say.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. 6:43, the Saturday morning update. Coming up next, the latest on the trials of Jussie Smollett and Ghislaine Maxwell. And you've heard about the alternative Mueller report? Well, you'll want to hear this next. It's all coming up with Jim Trusty. But first off, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Greenbelt, watch out for an accident on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway northbound approaching the Beltway, where the right lane is reported to be blocked. Eastbound on 50 at the Beltway, a disabled reported in the roadway, so use extra caution there. Traveling on the Beltway itself, so far everything looks like it's running at speed throughout Maryland and Virginia, and so far so good on 270, headed from Germantown and Gaithersburg to the Beltway. If you're traveling in Columbia, be aware of some road work eastbound on 108. Between Linden, Linthicum Lane, and Columbia Road, watch out for alternating traffic on the eastbound side. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny skies on this Saturday. Temperatures, they will be on the mild side, seasonably so in the upper 50s to near 60 degrees. As we head later on tonight, low temperatures back in the upper 20s in some of the outlying suburbs, low to mid 30s around town under partly cloudy skies. A little weak cold front will shift through during the day on Saturday. Really will be a dry frontal passage, but it'll bring with it some cooler air as we get towards your Sunday. High temperatures in the upper 40s to near 50 degrees under partly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
43 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:44, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Valor. Great to have you along with us this weekend. And there are always very interesting cases, trials, legal stories in the news. And who better than to cover them than Jim Trusty, former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice, now a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Catch him a lot on the Fox News Channel and Fox Business News and Newsmax. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The alternative Mueller report seems to be surfacing, an unpublished investigative compilation. It's been located in Justice Department files, could be released soon, according to a letter filed in federal court on Thursday. Tell us about the alternative Mueller report. Is that something that often happens where you have alternative reports that go along with cases?
I would go with never in history for $500, Rick. I mean, this is it's an amazing moment to have anyone even referring to it. You know, I was a prosecutor for about 27 years. I probably had 9 or 10 of those years as a supervisor, including of, you know, prosecution teams where we'd have a collection of prosecutors on the same investigation. It is not how prosecutors ever have done business. It's not like a congressional joint committee where you might have overt politics coloring the whole thing, where there's a majority report and then some sort of dissent or minority report that comes out of it. That's not how it works in prosecution. So this is really kind of an astounding thing. I mean, what they do generate is a prosecution memo that apparently normally would address all the strengths and weaknesses of the case and the decision. You know, are we going to seek charges or not? Andrew Weissman was the deputy for Mueller during this probe, but I think in a lot of ways, Weissman, the author of this mutiny memo, was really the person running the operations. This event, this idea that Weissman has authored an alternative report, I think really underscores how Mueller was not well served by his deputy, that Weissman is hyperpartisan, that he selected a team that included a good number of, I think, unqualified but very partisan individuals And it did a lot of harm to this country, and he's still trying to relive it. I mean, remember how he planted this by putting it in a book that there was this alternative report, and then, shock of shocks, the New York Times files a FOIA request to wrestle this book out of what will be, I think, an extremely compliant Department of Justice. So we're going to have a smear piece, a different document from the same investigation that tracks Weissmann's politics more than the actual evidence.
Is anybody paying any attention to the Durham investigation indictments so far, aside from maybe conservative media outlets and the Fox News channel, the whole Steele dossier, the relationship to the Clinton campaign? I mean, that's not got a lot of traction over at CNN and MSNBC, I don't think.
No, it's on their do not fly list. there is you're not allowed to talk about the Danchenko indictment or the Sussman indictment. But and remember, I mean, and we've talked about this, Rick. When you look at this together, you literally have evidence of the Democratic Committee, the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign, actually, hiring lawyers who knowingly planted false information with a person they believed to be a Russian intelligence agent. And that's the information that makes its way into the Steele dossier that a politically friendly FBI ran with to get FISA warrants. I mean, it's a convoluted story. I get it why it doesn't necessarily make media on a daily basis. But the import of it is to show that, yeah, there was collusion with the Russians. It was by the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign, not by Donald Trump.
Isn't Andrew Weissmann the guy that had a little trouble with his cell phone when the inspector general wanted to inspect it?
It's amazing how you can head off a probe that involves all sorts of technological savvy, including gathering emails and figuring out ways to use the criminal justice system to obtain information that people don't want you to have. But somehow Weissmann twice couldn't remember his password and had to wipe his cell phone clean, along with numerous other people that were on the Mueller probe, like Lisa Page, who turned her phone in at factory settings. So we will never know what was actually on the government devices that people like Andrew Weissmann had, who they contacted, what types of text messages, things that we would probably call, or he would probably call, obstruction if somebody else did it, or the typical manner of business when it came to the people on the Mueller investigation team.
How do you forget your password for your phone?
Well, I'm low tech, Rick. I'm capable of forgetting a lot. But when I was at DOJ using those same types of devices, I always knew that if I really got down to it and it's telling me you only have one more effort, that what you do is you pick up a landline and call the IT guy to come help you. You don't actually make that final guess. And I can't imagine that anybody in that whole Mueller probe took it with a straight face that so many people were forgetting their passwords. It was clearly an orchestrated effort to wipe out data, to not show who they were talking to or what they were saying, and it seemingly worked.
So the trial of Empire actor Jussie Smollett in Chicago this week, the prosecution has rested its case. Of course, Smollett had made the accusations that he was attacked by two men in MAGA hats. It was allegedly a racial incident. The prosecution has rested. Jim, what are the charges in the case?
Well, the special prosecutor that came in Cook County to take over the case after a pretty sleazy side deal by Kimberly Fox, who was the state's attorney in Cook County, charged him with a number of disorderly conduct offenses. But disorderly conduct under Illinois law includes felonies for things like false reporting of a hate crime. And that's the gist of the case, is his claim of being assaulted in the middle of the night on the way to a Subway shop was in fact a completely fabricated event, and that it affected government resources by way of making them investigate it.
So a case like this is going to be based on evidence. What stood out to you about the evidence presented by the prosecution?
Well, I think the starting point that's really fundamentally different than recent high-profile trials, you know, we saw the Arbery and the Rittenhouse trials that were so covered by videotape that it was almost like the jury didn't have to determine credibility. It was just essentially with known facts they had to determine how the law applied. Kind of a different scenario than most criminal trials. Well, Smollett's trial brings us back into the mainstream of criminal justice, which is the jury having to decide the credibility of witnesses. They heard from the two brothers that were enlisted by Jussie to falsely assault him. they have one piece of video that is, I think, kind of a smoking gun that's going to make things easier for a jury when it comes to credibility, and that is what they're referring to as a dry run, that there's a compilation of video that shows the two brothers and Jussie essentially practicing the assault that they were going to frame up the next night. And I think that's the type of thing that's a real tiebreaker that makes it pretty easy to accept that the brothers are telling the truth when they say they were solicited to create this false crime. And the prosecution rested with that kind of smoking gun video still in the player. So I think that's a big moment for testimony. And I think now we have to wait and see whether Smollett testifies. I'd be surprised, but from what I've seen of his attorneys, I would not bet against Smollett actually testifying next week.
You mentioned Smollett's attorney. There was a request for a mistrial in this case. You see mistrial requests quite often. This one's a little different, apparently.
To say the least, although it is endlessly making me laugh at the general circumstances. So one of Smollett's attorneys was asking the Cook County judge, Judge Lynn, for a mistrial based on her take on what these two brothers had to say about Jussie Smollett. And it was not the type of stuff that leads to a mistrial. You know, just because a fact is bad doesn't mean you get a new trial. So apparently, while they were having a sidebar, she accused Judge Lynn of lunging at her during her motion for a mistrial and then asked for a mistrial based on that. So in a trial of an individual accused of falsely saying that he was attacked, his attorney has now falsely said that she was attacked by the judge, no less. She went on to defend it, saying that these are the types of things that happen to attorneys of color. But I just have to wonder where in the heck Jussie Smollett got this attorney, and where this is going to go from now is anyone's guess. But it doesn't strike me that this is Perry Mason at work.
Well, there's another interesting case in the news this week. Ghislaine Maxwell, who, of course, was the associate of Jeffrey Epstein, she's on trial. What stood out to you about testimony in that case? Because a lot of people have been asking a lot of questions about some high-powered people. Anything coming out?
Yeah, well, it's coming out, again, not getting a ton of coverage, or certainly not play-by-play coverage from the mainstream media. Now, part of that is that it's looking to be a long trial. The government has said they estimate a six-week trial. We still have a long way to go. You know, in my experience, sometimes when a prosecution runs long, it creates its own reasonable doubt that it's not necessarily a great strategy to put every piece of evidence you could put in to a trial if you've got an otherwise tight case. What they've put forth so far, I guess, was probably highlighted initially by the pilot, who certainly was well aware of the celebrities that have gone back and forth to what's referred to as Orgy Island. We've also had a little bit of a walkthrough of Epstein's place that shows it was a highly sexualized domain, that there were nude photos of young women and paintings along the walls, all of that to show that Miss Maxwell was in a position where she couldn't avoid knowing what was happening there. And Rick, there's something that we see in sex trafficking cases that's referred to as a bottom. And what it means is a woman who was initially a prostitute, but who kind of advances within the criminal organization to become essentially a fellow pimp that recruits other women. We see this phenomena across, you know, all sorts of human trafficking cases. And I would say so far, Maxwell is coming off as even higher than that. She's really coming off as a bit of a co-executive with Jeffrey Epstein. There's accounts that are starting to come out from actual victims now of her physically participating in some of the sexual activities with the girls. We're beginning to hear, I think, more and more direct responsibility being put on Miss Maxwell. But, you know, your question was kind of what the big picture of what do we take of this case? The big issue in this case has already been decided, and that is that Maxwell is not cooperating. You know, I think that there are high-profile figures like Bill Clinton, Prince Andrew, whose names have come up often in the context of visits to Jeffrey's Island. And they've got to be happy that this is not a situation where Maxwell is a star government witness. So there's a lot to go on this trial. It's difficult to convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt when the clear front runner is not part of that trial. But I think the evidence of Ms. Maxwell's direct participation is coming out pretty strongly.
And there's been attention paid to the lead prosecutor, because of her father.
Yeah, of all things in this small world of Jeffrey Epstein, you know, like we didn't have enough conspiracy theories to mull over, James Comey's daughter is the lead prosecutor in this case. And so obviously a lot of folks are commenting on the fact that Maxwell's not cooperating and on kind of the surprisingly small world aspect of Comey's daughter handling what could have been a very politically charged matter with, when it comes to Ms. Maxwell and her decision to cooperate or not. Again, I don't know. Nobody's behind the scenes to be able to tell us what the plea negotiations were between Mr. Comey's daughter and the defense. But whatever the background is, we know in the foreground is a pretty sensational trial that's going to take a few more weeks to get resolved.
So Ms. Maxwell ain't talking, huh?
Not at this point.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law. You can follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer, and we'll be watching for you on the tube this week, Jim.
Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
And you too. 6:58 Saturday morning update, WMAL, 7 o'clock news coming up. And then we got John Gizzi. We've also got Cheryl Atkinson, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland all on the way in the 7 o'clock hour.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. The one radio station for you to depend on. All day, every day. 105.FM, WMAL, a Cumulus Media station.